Hello and welcome to the podcast portion of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, previews, reviews, and interviews with baseball authors, artists, filmmakers, musicians, anyone who has anything to do with baseball and pop culture. Because that's our slogan, if it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. As a sports editor for a weekly Jewish publication, I always have my antenna out for anything that pertains to this niche topic. You might be surprised, but as someone so connected with Jews in sports, it's amazing the number of times I still come across references to the scene from Airplane and the variations thereof that basically say the pool is very shallow, even though there are Jews representing every major sports and Jewish members of various halls of fame. So when I discovered the season of Pepsi Myers, I was all in. I was surprised to learn the author, A.B. Rotenberg, wasn't a career writer, but rather a well-known performer-composer in the Jewish music world. It took a bit of time to track him down. He's an ex-New Yorker who now makes his home in Toronto, but here he is to discuss the particular challenges of his project. A.B. Rotenberg, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Hi, Ron. Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
You know, you're... other day job, apart from your regular day job, is as a musician and composer. How would you describe your style for those who aren't familiar with your work?
Well, my music is probably in the folk genre, folk, soft country. I grew up enjoying Simon and Garfunkel and John Denver and, of course, Billy Joel and the Beatles. But... It's an eclectic mix of genres for my music.
Now, you've been doing this for a long time, but The Season of Pepsi Myers is your first novel. Is writing fiction something you always wanted to do?
Well, it's interesting. I obviously, as a lyricist, much of my music is two original lyrics. I'm also known in the Jewish music circles for writing melodies to liturgy or words from the Bible, from the Tanakh. But I'm a lyricist, and I started off doing that. And I've also written scripts for some children's albums. But I never wrote a novel until recently. I never thought of doing it. And just one day, the idea of the book came to mind, and I. Followed it, and I followed my heart, and it took me about 2 to 3 years to complete the entire process, and it's been great.
Could you briefly describe the premise of the story?
Well, Pepsi Myers is a phenom. He's an absolute unique kind of once-in-a-generation or maybe once-in-a-century ball player, and he... rescues the New York Yankees from ineptitude. I set the novel in the future. Obviously, the Yankees have been a very, very successful franchise during most of my lifetime, and I guess yours, Ron, and certainly, you know, since George took over. And I wanted my protagonist to be someone who took them from worst to first. I wanted the Yankees to be an absolutely miserable team. So I said it in the future, post salary cap. In other words, the salary cap entered baseball, leveling the playing field for the Yankees. And my player, Pepsi Myers, saves them from oblivion, and he brings them to the postseason and beyond. And obviously, along the way, Jewish boy, Pepsi's a Jewish boy, he discovers Judaism, so he has a major struggle and a major question of what to pursue in the future and which way to go with his life. And that's really the major premise of the book.
Now, you mentioned you set it in the future. Why did you set it in the future?
I wanted him to be... well, really two reasons. It would have been very, very difficult to place him in a historical context. I mean, my character coming out of nowhere and playing, rubbing shoulders with Don Mattingly or Mickey Mantle, and would have been difficult to place him in the past or to create a fiction. I very much wanted to be a real major league story. I didn't want to create an alternative league or put him in some minor league area. I wanted it to be a major league level. So to put him in the past would have been difficult. And in addition, I wanted him to, I wanted the Yankees to be bad. I wanted them to be a really, really unsuccessful team that he helped, making his struggle even greater. Because not only was he a good ball player, not only did he have fame and fortune from his career in baseball, but he was also the hero of New York. So it increased his struggle vis-a-vis choosing his choices, his career choices, his life choices, whether or not to pursue baseball or to find out more about Judaism.
Now, when we say future, it's not too far into the future.
Right. It's. I also had a lot of fun, you know, with the future idea a little bit. I had some innovations. I have a thing called auto ump, and the game is played. There are umpires on the field, but their decisions are reviewed electronically, and either silence ensues after they make a call because it's the correct call, or there's an overrule announcement and flashed on the screen and announced throughout the stadium, which can impact the game. And I had a lot of fun with that idea. And that was once I thought of doing it in the future, it helped me to flesh out the novel and have fun with that.
Now, did you vet this technology with anyone, or is this totally made up out of whole cloth?
Well, in the middle, while I was writing the book, the Major League Baseball instituted the video review. When I started the novel, they didn't even have that. Everything was, and at the time I thought, you know, who knows, you know, Major League Baseball could have gone 10 more years without video review, even though the NFL had it for a long time because it's a traditional sport. But so that was, that made me scramble a little bit. I had to change a few paragraphs because of that. But yeah. But no, it's completely completely a concoction of my mind.
Because, you know, you're talking about video review, but your technology has it in real time, which impacts a few story in the narrative.
Sure, I have a paragraph there saying that even that the calls are live. In other words, if an umpire is overruled. Right, every player knows or should know to wait for the ruling and the confirmation of the ruling. So if somebody strays off the base because the umpire called him out, and then the auto ump announces that he's safe, but he strayed off the base, so he could be tagged. Right, so you don't follow the umpire's call. You wait that extra second for confirmation before doing anything. So it was a lot of fun.
Now let's get back to the religious aspects of it. Pepsi Myers obviously has some things to consider and some issues to deal with. Mm-hmm. Do you think being successful in sports precludes following the tenets of a religion? Now, there are a number of evangelical Christians in sports, but they nevertheless play on Sunday and Christian holidays.
Could you repeat that? They never?
They nevertheless, they play on
nevertheless
their Sabbath
they play.
And yes, on their holidays.
Yes. Yeah. So let me just, for your audience, let me just quickly explain one other aspect. I mean, Pepsi Meyer is a Jewish kid. He's an only child. He stems from Binghamton, New York, upstate New York. And his parents and he himself have very, very little knowledge of Judaism. They're aware that they're Jewish, supportive of Israel, but they really don't know much of Jewish history, Jewish law, the Torah. These are things they've heard of, they know about it, but they have very, very little Jewish knowledge. And after being drafted by the Yankees, they moved to New York City for the season, and they happened to move in next door to a rabbi and his family. And the parents are very much affected by him, and they go to classes, and they start to learn about Judaism, and it makes an impact upon them. Pepsi's mostly busy playing and traveling and being a New York Yankee and doing wonderful things for the team, but he starts to notice the change in his parents, and he's curious about it, and he goes to a class or two and slowly falls in and learns more and more about his faith. And one of the things is the issue of the Sabbath and the Shabbat, as we call it. And yeah, in Jewish law, in traditional Jewish law, there are certain restrictions on the Shabbat, I think, that are stronger and stricter than perhaps in other religions. to answer your question. But perhaps, again, I'm not that familiar with Christianity, but there might be some traditional Christians who would frown upon a player playing on a Sunday.
Now, I also want to mention that Pepsi Myers is a teenager. He's not an adult. He's 18, I believe.
18 years old when he breaks in. Right, and he turns 19.
So he doesn't have that life wisdom. He's not like a 23, 24-year-old. He's a phenom, as you say. So does the age play into this at all?
That's a good question. That's a valid question. I could see the story playing out the same way, even had he gone to the minor leagues and spent a few years there, and eventually gone to the majors. But if the same circumstances happened, and today many people discover their Judaism or their religion later on in life, and it affects them. I met a fellow just interestingly. I met a fellow a few months ago who was on a scholarship at one of the major universities, a phenomenal athlete, tremendous, tremendous potential to make it into a professional sport. I don't want to say the particular sport. I don't want it to get back. Mm-hmm. But he left it as well. He encountered some rabbis on campus, and he and his fiancée were very, very taken up with Judaism. And it was again a sport that he could not play on the Sabbath, and by not playing on the Sabbath would preclude him from becoming a professional. And he walked away. So it happens in real life, and this is a person in his early 20s, a 23, 24-year-old fellow. He was in graduate school. And so it could happen at a younger age. It could happen at an older age. And I have the parents as well embracing Judaism in their late 60s.
Now, you bring up an interesting point. I've spoken with a number of Jewish athletes over the years, especially when it comes down to the so-called Yom Kippur dilemma.
Yeah.
Baseball players, especially position players like, let's say, Archamski or historically Hank Greenberg, can get away with taking a day off out of respect for the occasion, even if they don't attend synagogue. But a football player I spoke with said he felt too much pressure to play because football games are played less frequently, and he was the only player at his position. Can you ever imagine a real scenario in which a professional team would allow a player to follow his religion?
In Major League Baseball, probably not for a position player. Probably would not be practical. Because, again, we're talking about today, a person makes $10 million, $20 million a year. And I was calculating, David Price just got $30 million a year. He's probably going to make 30 starts. It's $1 million a start, right? So if we think about that, certainly today, the pressure upon an athlete and upon the team, if an observant Jew, no matter how good he was, said, listen, I can't play Friday night or Saturday afternoon, and not to mention the holidays that come up in September during a pennant race. You've got Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah, and it probably would not be practical. Maybe for an absolutely outrageously fantastic pitcher. Maybe it could happen one day. And I tell you, it would delight me to no end if something like that were to take place, if we would have a fellow, on any team, in any sport, by the way, who held on to his religion. Look, I'm religious. I grew up that way, a tradition in my family for generations. And there are, it's a strong community today in the United States, maybe a million strong of Shomer Shabbat Jews. And for us to have a hero like that would be phenomenal.
Let's talk about the writing process a little bit. You said it took you 2 to 3 years to do it. Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I think the first year was to basically write the story. It took another year to really modify, change, show it to people, get feedback, and edit it as well. And then really the last year was to learn. I did make some attempts to have it published. I sent it out to a few publishing companies, and to some very, very difficult to break in, and without a connection or an agent. And I was not able to get it picked up. So I spent the last year, or close to a year, learning how to self-publish. And thank God I have, through my music, I have a very a following, and it's been selling very, very well throughout the country, and I'm just delighted with the results.
Do you have plans for another book or a follow-up to this one?
I'm not sure. I really don't think so. I think the story is self-contained. But, you know, thank God I have ideas and maybe some other kind of story down the road.
Hey, we've been talking with A.B. Rottenberg, author of The Season of Pepsi Myers. A.B., thanks very much for talking with us today.
My pleasure. Ron, thank you so much for having me.
And that was our conversation with A.B. Rottenberg. Please tune in again next time when our guest will be John Leonardakis, cinematographer, documentarian, and creator of the new film Haino, A Century in the Bleachers. We'll be talking about the challenges of dealing with his project after it's been completed. Again, for the latest news, reviews, previews, and interviews, visit Ron Kaplan's baseballbookshelf.com. If you have any suggestions or comments or questions, please send them to ronkaplan's baseballbookshelf@gmail.com. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you later.